If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I was no stranger to the glitz and grime of Hollywood. At 45, I had seen it all, from drug overdoses to high-profile murders. Specializing in celebrity crimes, I had built a reputation as the go-to detective when the rich and famous found themselves in serious trouble. Arrogant? Maybe. But I found myself critiquing the very arrogance I saw in the stars I investigated. It was a job for me, and the glittering facade of fame held no allure. It was a crisp morning in 1999 when I received the call that would plunge me into one of the most bizarre cases of my career. The phone rang shrilly on my desk, piercing the quiet hum of the precinct. I picked it up, expecting another overdose starlet or a drunken brawl between A-listers. Instead, the voice on the other end spoke of a death in the notorious mansion of Rachel Matheson, a young actress whose meteoric rise had captivated Hollywood. Rachel Matheson, 23, married to an older man, had been found dead under mysterious circumstances. My interest was piqued. I remembered the mansion well. It had once belonged to pop sensation Emily Willis, who had famously gone crazy shortly after moving in. The press had a field day with Emily's public meltdowns and eventual departure from the house. And now it seemed the mansion had claimed another victim. I hung up the phone, a mix of skepticism and curiosity swirling in my mind. I grabbed my coat and headed out, the weight of another high-profile case settling on my shoulders. As I drove through the winding roads of the Hollywood Hills, I couldn't shake the feeling that there was more to this case than met the eye. The mansion loomed ahead, a spiraling estate with an unsettling aura. The scene was a familiar chaos of flashing cameras, reporters, and yellow police tape. I parked my car and made my way through the crowd, flashing my badge to gain entry. The paparazzi buzzed around like vultures, hungry for any scrap of information. Inside, the opulence of the mansion was overshadowed by the somber scene. Rachel's lifeless body laid at the foot of the grand staircase, her once vibrant presence now a ghostly shell. I took in the details. The lavish decor, the eerie silence, the faint smell of expensive perfume mingled with death. It was a stark reminder of how quickly fortune could turn in this town. Rachel's older husband, Frank Lester, was a famous producer with a reputation as scummy as they come. Everyone in Hollywood knew his name, and not for the best reasons. As I surveyed the room, I couldn't help but think of Emily Willis. Just a few years ago, Emily had lived here, her career unraveling in a series of bizarre incidents. The mansion had always seemed cursed, a beautiful trap that ensnared its residents. I pushed the thoughts aside. I dealt with facts, not fantasies, and there was a job to do. The initial examination of the scene offered little. Rachel's body showed no obvious signs of trauma, and the cause of the death was not immediately apparent. My mind raced with possibilities. Was it an overdose, foul play, or something more sinister? I knew the answers wouldn't come easy. As I continued my investigation, I couldn't ignore the mansion's dark history. The walls seemed to whisper secrets, and the air was thick with an unspoken dread. I would have to dig deep, uncovering the layers of fame, tragedy, and possibly the supernatural to get to the truth. Rachel looked almost peaceful, as if she had simply decided to lie down and never get back up again. There was no apparent signs of trauma, no blood, no bruises. It was as if life had just quietly slipped away. The first responders had already cordoned off the area, and I made my way over to the officer in charge. "What have we got?" I asked, keeping my voice low. "Not much, detective," he said. "No signs of forced entry, no immediate cause of death. It's a real mystery." I nodded, my mind racing through the possibilities. Overdose seemed likely, given Hollywood's penchant for excess. But something about the scene felt off. The mansion's history loomed large in my mind. Emily Willis, the pop star who had lived here before Rachel, had famously unraveled within these walls. Her public meltdowns and subsequent departure had only added to the mansion's dark reputation. I couldn't shake the feeling that there was something more here, something beneath the surface. As I looked around the lavishly decorated room, my eyes were drawn to small details. A vase slightly askew, a rug with a corner turned up, little things that hinted at a struggle or at least a hurried exit. Rachel's husband, Frank Lester, was nowhere to be seen, but I knew I'd have to talk to him soon. His reputation as a scummy producer preceded him, and I had no doubt he'd have plenty to say, or not say, about his young wife's untimely death. First, though, I needed to gather some initial statements. I approached one of the first responders, a young officer who looked a bit green around the gills. "What did you find here when you got here?" I asked. "Not much, sir," he replied, his voice shaky. "The body was already cold, no signs of struggle that we could see. It was like she just stopped." I nodded, filing away his words. I needed more than that, something concrete to go on. As I moved through the house, I spoke with the staff who had been present. A maid, her face pale and drawn, told me she had found Rachel that morning. "She was just lying there," she whispered, her eyes wide with fear. "I don't know what to do." Her fear was palpable, making me wonder what else she might know. But for now, I had to keep moving. There were more pieces to this puzzle, and I needed to find them. As I examined the room, my eyes caught on a small, almost imperceptible detail. A smudge on the wall near the staircase. It was faint, barely there, but it looked like a handprint. A chill ran down my spine as I realized it was too high to be Rachel's. I stepped back, my mind working overtime. There was more to this than met the eye, and I was determined to uncover it. The mansion held its secrets close, but I was ready to dig deep, to peel back the layers of fame and tragedy that cloaked this place. Rachel's rise to fame had been nothing short of meteoric. From her first breakout role at 17, she captured the hearts of millions with her raw talent and striking beauty. By 23, she was a household name, gracing the covers of magazines and starring on blockbuster films. She had the kind of career most actresses would only dream of, and her public image was carefully curated to perfection. Then came Frank Lester, a re-owned producer with a reputation that was as much a liability as an asset. Frank was known for his questionable ethics and a string of scandals that never quite seemed to stick. When Rachel announced their marriage, the public was shocked. She was young, vibrant, and seemingly on top of the world, while Frank was older and nervously scummy.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The media speculated endlessly about their relationship, but Rachel remained tight-lipped, always the picture of grace under pressure. Their marriage, however, was anything but perfect. According to friends, Rachel's life began to change after she moved into the mansion with Frank. The house was beautiful, perched high in the Hollywood Hills, but it had a history that seemed to cast a long shadow over its inhabitants. Before moving into the mansion, Rachel was a regular on the party circuit, always seen with a smile on her face and a drink in her hand. But soon after settling into her new home, her behavior started to shift. She withdrew from the public eye, her once frequent appearances dwindling to almost nothing. Rumors began to circulate that Rachel had become a recluse trapped within the gilding cage of her mansion. I started digging deeper, talking to those who had known her best. Calling her friends and colleagues painted a picture of a young woman who had been full of life and ambition, only to be slowly consumed by something she couldn't understand. They spoke of strained relationships, particularly with Frank. The glitz and glamour of their marriage had quickly worn off, revealing a much darker reality. She wasn't herself, one friend told me. Rachel was always so vibrant, so full of energy. But after she had moved in with Frank, it was like a light had gone off inside her. Others mentioned more disturbing details. Rachel had confided in a few close friends that she felt like she was being watched, even when she was alone. She spoke of strange noises at night, whispers, footsteps, and feeling of being touched by unseen hands. At first, her friends thought she was just stressed or maybe even dabbling in substances to cope with the pressures of her career and marriage. But as her stories grew more consistent, so did their concern. Over the phone, I would go in to interview a former assistant who had worked with Rachel up until a few months before her death. She described Rachel's increasing paranoia and erratic behavior. She'd call me in the middle of the night terrified, the assistant said. She'd say there was someone in the house, but when we checked, there was no one there. It got to the point where I was scared to go over, but I couldn't leave her like that. The more I learned, the more it seemed that Rachel's decline was not just a fault of personal troubles, but something more sinister. Her friends hinted at foul play, though none could provide concrete evidence. There were whispers that Frank had been controlling, possibly even abusive, though no one dared to say it outright. It was becoming clear that Rachel's death was surrounded by a web of secrets and lies. Her complaints about feeling watched and experiencing strange events in the mansion couldn't be easily dismissed. There was something deeply wrong in that house, and it had taken its toll on both Rachel and her predecessor, Emily Willis. As I gathered these fragments of Rachel's life, I couldn't help but feel a growing sense of urgency. The mansion had more than just a backdrop to her tragedy. It was a vital piece of the puzzle. I needed to find out what had truly happened to Rachel, and why the mansion seemed to claim everyone who lived there. My first stop was Frank Lester, Rachel's husband. He was sitting in the study, a glass of whiskey in his hand, staring blankly at the painting on the wall. The room was dark, the only light coming from a small lamp on the desk. It cast long shadows that danced across the walls, giving the space an eerie, almost haunted feel. "Mr. Lester," I said, stepping into the room. "I'm Detective Tyler. I need to ask you a few questions." He looked up at me, his eyes bloodshot and wary.
"Of course, Detective," he replied, flat and emotionless. "Anything to help."
I took a seat opposite him, pulling out my notepad. "Can you tell me about the night Rachel died?" Frank sighed heavily, taking a long sip of his drink.
"We had dinner together," he began. "She seemed distant, but that wasn't unusual lately. After dinner, she said that she was tired and went to bed early. I stayed up working in my office. When I checked on her later, she was already gone."
I studied his face, looking for any signs of deceit. He was composed, but something about his demeanor didn't sit right with me. "Can you confirm your whereabouts during that time?"
He shook his head. "No, I was alone."
I nodded, jotting down his response. "Did Rachel have any enemies? Anyone that may have wanted to harm her?" Frank's face hardened.
"Rachel was loved by everyone. She had no enemies."
I thanked him and left the study, the weight of his words lingering in my mind. I needed to speak to the staff next. The maid who had found Rachel's body was still visibly shaken. She recounted her discovery in a quivering voice, describing how she had found Rachel lying at the foot of the stairs, her body cold and lifeless. The gardener and security personnel had little to add. Their statements were routine and unremarkable. It was clear that Rachel's death had shocked everyone, but no one seemed to have any concrete answers. Back in the main hall, I began to gather evidence. I meticulously examined every inch of the scene, collecting physical evidence and noting anything out of place. I reviewed the mansion's security footage, but it yielded nothing unusual. Phone records and Rachel's personal items were similarly uninformative, offering no clear leads. As I explored the mansion, the sense of unease grew. The house was vast, with countless rooms and corridors that seemed to stretch forever. Each step I took echoed through the halls, amplifying the silence that hung heavy in the air. In one of the upstairs bedrooms, I noticed something odd. A section of the wall didn't quite match the rest of the room. It looked like an ordinary part of the wall, but I realized it was slightly ajar upon closer inspection. Pushing it open, I discovered a hidden door that blended seamlessly with the surrounding wall when closed. Behind the door was a small, hidden room. Dust covered the furniture, and the air was thick with the scent of decay. I found old photographs of a young girl and a man on a dusty table. The girl looked eerily familiar. It was Martha Franklin, the famous child actor who had gone missing years ago. The man, her father Ronald, had committed suicide shortly after her disappearance. The room sent a chill down my spine. This was a grim reminder of the mansion's dark past, and I couldn't shake the feeling that I was somehow connected to Rachel's death. As the day turned into night, I knew I needed rest to process everything I had found. I headed home, my mind racing with the day's discoveries. As I lay in bed, my thoughts kept returning to the mansion and the secrets it held. Exhaustion eventually pulled me into a restless sleep. That night, the dreams began. They started innocently enough, showing Rachel and Emily Willis's rise to fame. But soon, they turned darker. I saw Rachel's joy and excitement slowly give way to fear and paranoia after moving into the mansion. Emily's dreams were similar, showing her descent into madness, her public meltdowns, and her eventual departure from the house. These dreams felt more like memories than figments of my imagination. I woke up drenched in sweat, my heart pounding, the line between reality and the paranormal blurring more with each passing day. The more I uncovered, the more I was convinced that the mansion itself held the key to understanding Rachel's death. The history of the house, the mysterious disappearances and eerie experiences, they were all pieces of the puzzle that I needed to solve. Returning to the mansion the next day, I felt a renewed sense of purpose.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Strange dreams had left a lingering unease, but they had also given me a glimpse into the lives of Rachel and Emily Willis. I was determined to uncover the truth, no matter how bizarre or frightening it may be. The mansion greeted me with its usual eerie silence. I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched as I stepped inside. The air was thick with tension, and the shadows seemed to move independently. I took a deep breath and reminded myself that I had dealt with facts, not fantasies. But the line between the two was growing increasingly thin. I began my investigation in the main hall, where Rachel's body had been found. I immediately felt a chill sweep through the room, settling over me like a cold blanket. It was an unusual warm day, but the temperature inside the mansion felt like it had dropped several degrees. As I moved through the house, the feeling of being watched grew stronger, accompanied by faint whispers that seemed to come from nowhere. Suddenly, a loud crash echoed from one of the rooms upstairs. I rushed towards the sound, my heart pounding. When I arrived, the room was empty, but a vase that had been sitting on the shelf was now shattered on the floor. There was no one else in the house, at least, no one I could see. The hairs on my neck stood on end as I realized I was not alone. As the day wore on, the strange occurrences continued. Objects moved on their own, cold spots appeared and disappeared without warning, and the whispers grew louder. At one point, I felt a strange pain in my arm as if something had scratched me. I looked down to see three thin red lines forming, though there was nothing nearby that could have caused them. The physical sensations were unnerving, but the visions were worse. They came suddenly, vivid and disorienting, pulling me into the scenes from Rachel and Emily's lives. I saw Rachel pacing her bedroom, her eyes wide with fear. She was muttering to herself, glancing nervously at the door. The next moment, I was in Emily's shoes, standing on the balcony as she screamed at the paparazzis below, her face twisted in anguish. These visions were more than dreams. They were memories imprinted on the very walls of the mansion. Determined to find answers, I revisited the hidden room I had discovered the previous day. The room seemed even more foreboding in the daylight, dust motes dancing in the beams of light that filtered through the small window. I searched through the old photographs and personal items, looking for anything that might explain the hauntings. In a dusty corner, I found a small chest. Inside were Martha Franklin's diary and a bundle of letters. The diary's pages were brittle with age, but the words were still legible. Martha's entries painted a picture of a young girl trapped in a nightmare. Diary entry, August 12, 1978. Father gave me those pills again tonight. He said they would help me sleep, but they make me feel so strange. Everything becomes hazy, and I could barely keep my eyes open. I hate it. I hate how he looks at me when I'm like that. Last night, he had those men over again. They smelled like cigarettes and alcohol. Father told me to be nice to them, that it was for my career. One of them touched my face and smiled in a way that made my skin crawl. I tried to pull away, but Father grabbed my arm and whispered, "Do it for the family, Martha." I feel so dirty and used. I just want it to stop. The horror in her words were palpable, and it made my stomach turn. I could hardly imagine the torment she had endured. The letters from her father were no less disturbing. Letter from Ronald Franklin, November 3rd, 1979. Martha, sometimes I look at you and I see nothing but a burden. You are supposed to be my ticket to a better life, but all you bring is misery. Your whining, your refusal to do what needs to be done, it's agitating. There are days where I wish you had never been born, or better yet, that you would just disappear. You think you're special because you can cry on command and look pretty for the cameras? You're nothing without me. Remember that. The venom in his words were chilling, and it was clear that Ronald Franklin had been a deeply disturbed man. The more I read, the more I understood the depth of the trauma that had seeped into the walls of the mansion. As I pieced together the history of Martha and her father, the unexplained events in the house began to make more sense. The cold spots, the whispering, the feeling of being watched. They were all manifestations of the lingering spirits trapped within the mansion. Martha's pain and her father's cruelty had left a mark, creating a dark energy that affected everyone who lived there. The experiences weren't just confined to the hidden room. As I moved through the house, I could feel the weight of their presence everywhere. In the kitchen, utensils clattered in drawers, seemingly of their own accord. In the living room, books fell from shelves, their pages fluttering as if caught in a breeze that didn't exist. The atmosphere was thick with a sense of unrest. That night, as I laid in bed, the dreams came again. They were more intense than before, pulling me deeper into the lives of Rachel and Emily. I saw Rachel arguing with Frank, her face contorted with fear and anger. She pleaded with him, begging him to believe her about what she had been experiencing. Frank dismissed her, calling her hysterical and accusing her of making it all up for attention. In another dream, I saw Emily scribbling frantically in her journal, her hands shaking. She wrote about the voices she had heard at night, the shadows that seemed to move on their own. She described waking up with bruises and scratches just like I had. Her terror was palpable, and I could feel it seeping into my own subconscious. The line between reality and dreams was almost non-existent when I awoke. I knew I needed to speak with someone who had experienced this firsthand. I contacted Emily Willis, hoping she could provide insight into her time in the mansion. Finding her wasn't difficult. She had retreated from the public eye but still lived in Los Angeles. When I called, Emily was initially hesitant, but mentioning the mansion and Rachel's death seemed to break through her reluctance. She agreed to meet me at a small, secluded cafe the following day. Emily looked different from her days of stardom. There was a fragility about her, an awareness in her eyes. Over coffee, she shared her story. "The house changes you," she said, her voice barely above a whisper. "It's like it has a mind of its own. I started hearing things and seeing things. It made me doubt my sanity." She described the same sensations I had experienced. The cold spots, the whispers, the feeling of being watched. She spoke of nightmares that mirrored the visions I had had. "It's not just me," she continued. "I think the house amplifies whatever darkness is inside you. It feeds on it." Emily's story confirmed my suspicions. The mansion was more than just a building. It was a vessel for the tormented spirits of Martha and her father. The trauma and violence of their lives had seeped into the very fabric of the house, affecting everyone who lived there. As our conversation drew to a close, Emily looked at me with a mix of pity and resolve. "If you want to help Rachel, you need to set Martha free. She's the key to all of this." Her words echoed in my mind as I left the cafe. The path ahead was becoming clearer, but it was also more dangerous. I was dealing with forces beyond my understanding, but I was determined to see it through. Rachel's death couldn't be in vain, and the spirits of the mansion deserved peace. Preparing for what lay ahead, I knew this was not going to be a conventional confrontation. This wasn't about suspects and alibis, but restless spirits and unresolved trauma.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I needed to free Martha and banish her father's dark presence once and for all. The tools at my disposal were not weapons or handcuffs, but the truth found in Martha's diary and Ronald's letters. I gathered everything I needed. Martha's diary, Ronald's letters, and some personal artifacts I'd found in the hidden room. These items had the essence of their lives and, I hoped, the power to bring closure to their spirits. I decided to return to the mansion at night when the paranormal activity seemed to be at its peak. As I arrived, the mansion was shrouded in darkness, its imposing silhouette framed against the night sky. The atmosphere was tense and foreboding, the air heavy with anticipation. I could feel the eyes of unseen entities watching me as I made my way inside. Every creak of the floorboards, every whisper of the wind seemed amplified in the silence. I headed straight for the hidden room, the epic center of the mansion's dark energy. Once inside, I arranged Martha's artifacts carefully on the dusty table, creating a shrine of sorts. I placed her diary at the center, flanked by the letters of her father and the old photographs. Taking a deep breath, I began to read aloud from Martha's diary. "Father gave me those pills again today. He said they would help me sleep, but they made me feel so strange." As I read, the temperature in the room dropped noticeably. The air grew colder, and I saw my breath forming misty clouds. The shadows in the room seemed to deepen, and I felt a palpable presence gathering around me. I continued reading, my voice steady despite the growing sense of dread. He had those men over again. They smelled like cigarettes and alcohol. Father told me to be nice to them, that it was for my career. A sudden gust of wind blew through the room, extinguishing the candles I had lit. The darkness was almost complete, save for the faint moonlight filtering through the small window. I could hear faint whispers, indistinct but filled with malice. The temperature plummeted further, and I shivered despite myself. I pulled out one of Ronald's letters and began to read. Martha, sometimes I look at you, and I see nothing but a burden. The reaction was immediate. The room seemed to shake, and an unseen force threw me against the wall. Pain shot through my body as I struggled to get up. The whispers grew louder and angrier, and I felt a sharp, invisible claws rake across my back. I gritted my teeth and pushed on. You were supposed to be my ticket to a better life, but all you bring is misery. The shadows coalesced in a darker, more solid form. Ronald's spirit was manifesting, a twisted, malevolent figure that seemed to pulse with anger. His eyes burned with an unnatural light as he moved towards me, his presence suffocating. The air grew thick and I struggled to breathe. As I continued to read, Martha's spirit began to appear. At first, she was faint, a barely perceptible glow in the darkness. But with each word from her diary, her presence grew stronger. She was a pale, ethereal figure, her eyes filled with sorrow and determination. Last night, he had those men over again. They smelled like cigarettes and alcohol. Ronald's spirit howled in rage, his form growing more turbulent. He lunged at me, and I felt a crushing weight on my chest as if an invisible hand had squeezed the life out of me. I gasped for air, my vision blurring, but I couldn't stop now. Martha, I gasped, struggling to keep my voice steady. You need to stand up to him. You need to tell him he no longer has power over you. Her form solidified further, her eyes locking onto Ronald's. Father, she said, her voice trembling but strong. You have no power over me anymore. You can't hurt me or anyone else ever again. Ronald's spirit recoiled, his form flickering. You think you could defy me? He snarled, his voice echoing with fury. You are nothing without me. Martha stepped forward, her presence growing more formidable. You're wrong, she said, her voice clear and unwavering. I am stronger than you ever were. Your hatred and cruelty end here. The room shook violently, and I felt the pressure on my chest release. Ronald's spirit howled in rage, thrashing wildly. I could see his form disintegrating, bits of darkness peeling away like ash in the wind. Martha's light grew brighter, pushing back the shadows.
Stay away, you whore!
Ronald roared, but his voice was weaker, his form dissolving. With a final defiant cry, Martha stepped forward and reached out her hand. Goodbye, Daddy, she said, her voice ringing with authority. Ronald's spirit let out a final agonizing scream before dissolving completely. The darkness lifted, and the room was filled with an almost blinding light. Martha's spirit turned to me, a look of gratitude and peace on her face.
Thank you,
she whispered, her form beginning to fade.
You've set me free.
As her spirit disappeared, the oppressive atmosphere in the mansion lifted. The air felt lighter, the shadows less menacing. I took a deep breath, feeling a sense of relief wash over me. The spirits of the mansion had been released, and their torment had finally ended. In the aftermath, I stood in the hidden room,
reflecting on what had just transpired. The mansion felt different now, and its dark history confronted and laid the rest. I gathered the artifacts and carefully placed them back in the chest. They were no longer needed to keep the spirits at bay, but would serve as a reminder of the mansion's turbulent past. As I left the mansion, I contemplated its future. The story of Rachel and Emily, of Martha and Ronald, would likely become legend, drawing curiosity and speculation. The mansion itself, now free of its dark influence, might finally be at peace. Back at the precinct, I filed my report, knowing that the official story would never fully capture the actual events. Some things are beyond explanation, existing in the realms of the supernatural and the human heart. The case had tested my beliefs and my resolve, but in the end, it had reaffirmed my commitment to seeking the truth, no matter how strange or unsettling. I focused on the tangible evidence, Martha's diary, Ronald's letters, the hidden room, and left the paranormal experiences implied rather than explicitly stated. Returning home, I felt a wave of exhaustion wash over me. The physical toll of the confrontation and the emotional weight of the case left me drained. I collapsed on my bed, too tired to change my clothes. Sleep came quickly, but it was restless, filled with fragments of the night's events and the faces of those I had tried to help. I began by recounting the facts: Rachel's death, the investigation, the discovery of the hidden room, and the artifacts I found there. As I wrote, I realized that the truth, however strange, needed to be told. I included excerpts from Martha's diary detailing her father's abuse and the horrors she endured. I added passages from Ronald's letters, exposing his resentment and cruelty. I documented the physical evidence, the scratches, the cold spots, and the whispers. I framed the supernatural elements as psychological phenomena, the result of intense trauma and unresolved conflict. The media frenzy that followed was inevitable. Headlines screamed of haunted mansions and tragic starlets, blending fact with fiction in a way only Hollywood could. The mansion quickly became infamous, and its dark history and recent events made it a prime target for horror stories and ghost tours. The public's morbid curiosity seemed insatiable, and the legend of the mansion grew with each passing day. Amid the chaos, I found the moments of quiet reflection. My disbelief in the paranormal had been thoroughly changed, and I couldn't deny the reality of what I had experienced. The case forced me to confront my own skepticism and consider the possibility that some things were beyond explanation. I often thought of Rachel, Emily, and Martha. Their stories were tragic, each of them a victim of circumstances and forced beyond their control. Rachel's life had been cut short. Emily had been driven to the brink of madness, and Martha had suffered unimaginable horrors at the hands of her father. Their experiences were etched into the fabric of the mansion, their pain and fear lingering long after their deaths. The broader implications of the case weighed heavily on me. It had shown me that the world was far more complex and mysterious than I had ever imagined. As a detective, I was trained to seek the truth, to uncover facts and evidence. But this case had taught me that some truths couldn't be neatly categorized or fully understood. It opened my eyes to reality's darker, more enigmatic aspects. I couldn't help but think about the mansion's future. Part of me hoped it would be left alone, its dark history respected rather than exploited. Another part of me wished it would be demolished, its haunted walls and twisted legacy reduced to rubble. But I knew the mansion would likely remain a monument to the horrors it had witnessed and the stories it had inspired. Back at the precinct,
I discussed the case with my colleagues. Some were intrigued, others skeptical. The details of confrontation and the release of the spirits were shared in hushed tones, and I could see the impact it had on them. It was a reminder that our work often involves delving into the unknown, confronting not just criminals, but the very nature of reality itself. As I contemplated my next steps, I couldn't shake the feeling that this case had changed me. It had pushed me to the limits of my understanding and forced me to consider the possibility of encountering similar cases in the future. The world was full of mysteries, and I knew that my role as a detective may take me into even darker and stranger territories. For now, though, I will content to reflect on what I had learned. The mansion's dark history had been illuminated, and its restless spirits had been laid to rest. And while the public continued to speculate and sensationalize, I knew the true story, a story of tragedy, resilience, and the enduring power of the truth. The scars across my back were a constant reminder of those three women, and I will use them to keep me moving forward.